in our story so far of the God story? Well, God's good creation has an harmonious world, which we met in week one. In week two, was undermined by the crafty enemy, the Satan, whose tactic was to deceive those created in the image of God. He made them believe that it was possible to be God, and he made them believe that God was not enough. Now, you might have already noticed, but on the sheet that I've given you with the song words, I've also given you a few notes if you want to scribble anything down. So if you are the kind of person who likes to do that, do feel free. But if that doesn't help your concentration, that's absolutely fine. Doesn't matter. Now, God gave to humankind the provision of choice. In other words, he gave them free will. This was a very risky strategy on God's part. In spite of living in an ideal world with absolutely everything they needed, with God as a companion even, humankind chose the way of self-help and self-reliance, not the way of trust. But as we left the story in week two, we were still left with God calling to his children, "Where are you? I will pursue you. I want to be with you." And now, by the time we get to chapter 15 of Genesis, Abram, this 75-year-old farmer, not the most likely candidate for an epic pilgrimage from the known into the unknown, comes into the story, and the least likely candidate to be made the father of nations, because he and his wife Sarah had not had any children and had not been able to have children. So starting with this one person, God seems to be narrowing down the focus. We've done creation, we've done Noah, we've done the flood, but God is now narrowing down the focus onto one chosen group of people who he hopes to fashion as his own. And he hopes that they will become an alternative community reflecting his nature, but calling the whole of humanity back to God's heart. Now, it's a bit of a scandal to some people that God chose one particular group. But this particularity was always intended for inclusivity. God still longed to fill the whole world with his love and his presence, but it began with his chosen people. It began with that seed of blessing in Abraham's heart. This is the moment in this story where God forms a covenant. And this is a word we're going to explore in some detail. What does a covenant mean with Abram? So the story of Abram actually began in chapter 12 when God called him and gave him this promise that he would become a father and he would be a father of all nations and he would be a blessing to the whole world. The story we're looking at is 10 years later. So he's waited already for 10 years and he's pretty fed up that God hasn't come through for him. And I love what the theologian Peterson says about when we are confused and when we are in the dark. Peterson writes this: "When nothing we can do makes any difference and we are left standing around empty-handed and clueless, we are ready for God to create." When nothing we can do makes any difference. Oh, that puts us in our place, doesn't it? When we are empty-handed and clueless, that's when God will act. The thing I want you to notice most out of this story is that it is all God. All God. What Abraham offers to God is an open-hearted willingness to believe and to wait. And waiting and wandering around in the pitch dark are very much ways in which God leads people. Abraham has already had 10 years of this before God speaks these words of hope and comfort that we see at the start of chapter 15. Don't be afraid, Abraham. I am your very great, your shield and your very great reward. Not, don't be afraid, Abraham, I haven't forgotten about the baby. Don't be afraid, Abraham, I am your very great shield and reward. What God is saying is that his presence is the thing that matters more than anything else. Forget the promise of being a father to the nations and a blessing to all. God wants Abraham to trust that God is enough. But as we've already said, Abraham is broken and disappointed. And we hear it in what he says to God. How can I be a father of nations when you haven't even made me a father? And then there comes this amazing sentence. After God has taken him out and said, look at the stars and count them if you can, it says, Abram believed the Lord and he credited it to him as righteousness. In other words, God said, that'll do. That'll do, Abram. That's all you need to do. All. I know it's not easy. I love the way that on page 43 of the God story, if you've got the book, it says this. It describes this, what this verse is. This is the biblical language of wholehearted trust in full surrender to the goodness of God when you don't know the details of what it will mean for your future. This is the kind of relentless trust that is the basis for right relationship with the living God. This is the basis for right relationship. That'll do, says God to Abraham. You trust. It's not easy. Now, I'm going to say something a bit provocative here. I wonder if, for most of the time, most of us, and I include myself, are very much more interested in the benefits of being in contact with God. God's blessings, God's provision, God's answers to prayer, God's protection, than simply having God's presence in our lives. Are we more interested in the benefits of being in contact with God than we are in simply having God's presence in our lives? You see, most of us take a very self-help approach to life. You know, we take advice, we make plans, we invest money, we employ techniques, we analyze gifts, we look at our diaries, we explore potential, we set goals, we assess progress, and we do this all of our lives in every way. But we also do this when it comes to spiritual growth and maturity. And whenever God doesn't seem to be coming through for us and life doesn't seem to be going well, we then go back to our performance and we become anxious and we think, maybe I've been doing this all wrong. Or maybe we think, I'm not good enough. Why is this happening to me? But God is calling us to the practice of living what God is doing. God never said he was calling us to an easy life. And if that doesn't make any sense to you, well, that's what the story of Abraham will help us. Hopefully, we're going to see how that works out in his life. So, first point, God picked the most unlikely and least qualified, an elderly and infertile couple. Notice that how he's received this promise. After he's got the promise, Abraham then tries all sorts of angles to make the promise come true. Well, you know, Eliezer, what about my manservant? He could be my inheritor. And then, much more disappointingly, later on in the story, Abraham will take Hagar, his wife's servant woman, and have a child with her, hoping that this child will become the bearer of the promise. None of that works out very well. Sorry, plot spoiler. None of it works out very well. And Abraham pays a high price for his failure to wholeheartedly trust God, that God said he would do what he would do. And he ends up having to wait a lot more years. And you know, isn't that just what we do? When we get anxious, we cease to simply be with God in wonder and worship, in relationship and trust, and instead we seek to control God. When we're anxious, we want to come up with solutions and strategies and programs, and we want these things so much that we end up missing out completely on the presence of God, who didn't promise us anyway a problem-free life, but did promise to be with us through every deep, dark, and confusing, bewildering experience. But because we don't like being in deep, dark, bewildering experiences, and that's natural, and I'm not criticizing anybody for that because I'm just as bad at being in those places, we don't want to be with God. We want God to do something. Let's come back to this word covenant. It's not a word we use very often in our own everyday lives. We are instead very, very familiar with the word contract. We've all got contracts. You've probably got a contract for your central heating system. You've got a contract for your mobile phone. Contracts are for everyday activities. Contracts mean, if you do this, then I'll do that. Yeah? There's nothing wrong with contracts. They're perfectly good. They're fit for purpose. They're rather dull. And even though we're notoriously bad at reading the small print when Amazon or iPhone throws up all those terms and conditions and we just click, yeah, whatever, because we can't be bothered to read them, we kind of know where we stand with a contract. We know our rights. That's the point of a contract. It's about our rights. If the other person breaks the contract, then we can claim compensation. We can take them to court if we want to, but we also know what our responsibilities are in a contract. Is a contract a good thing? Yes, absolutely, it's a good thing. God doesn't do contracts. Hate to break it to you, God does not do contracts. When you became, or if you were to become a Christian, you do not enter into a contract with God. You cannot possibly do that. A contract, for the first reason, is only between equals. And you are not equal to God. Secondly, you cannot put a contract around stuff you cannot control. And the things that you cannot control that really make life valuable and worth living are love, relationships, suffering, death, unexpected turn of events. You cannot put a contract around those things. Stuff you cannot control. Instead of a contract, we put a covenant around things we cannot control. And many of you have one. If you entered into a marriage, you are in a covenant, not a contract. You may have had a prenup, but that's your business, not mine. You made a covenant with your spouse. It was not about your rights. It was not about you. It was about you giving away your rights. A contract is about rights, but a covenant is about giving away your rights. Now, when it comes to thinking about God, you might well say to me, but why would I want to do that? I'd much rather have a God who offered me a contract. And yet, this is what God has done. And why has God offered us a covenant? Because a covenant is unconditional love and acceptance. It is grace freely offered. Let's just unpack a little bit more of Genesis 15. By the way, I know this is a bit longer than I normally preach, but we did take out all the extra bits and a whole extra reading to allow these sermons to be a bit longer. So I hope you're still with me. Back to Genesis 15. If you look at verses 9 and 10, something rather icky happens. It's really quite revolting. So Abraham is asked to get all these animals together and to slice them in half and to make a pathway with half an animal on each side and a bird on each side. It's all pretty revolting. Now, this is not some weird one-off activity that God has dreamt up, okay? Historians agree that what's actually taking place here is a contractual arrangement being acted out. Remember, this is a pre-literate society. Nobody wrote things down. There were not, you know, most people couldn't read or write. This is how you enacted a contract, okay? For example, if you and your neighbor wanted to enter into a contract about your field or your land, where your boundary was, you would commit to this ceremony of bringing animals, slicing them in half, and then walking down between them, holding a flame. All right, that was what you did. And effectively, what you're saying by your actions is, this is the price I am prepared to pay to make this contract with you. And if I break this contract, may this happen to me, pointing at the dead animals sliced in half. Okay, so serious business, making a contract. Yes, it sounds icky, but does that help you understand what's going on? So a costly enactment of their commitment to forming a contract. Now, extraordinarily, in this chapter, things don't quite go the way they should normally have gone in a contractual ceremony. Because by the time the sun sets, we're told that Abraham falls asleep and a thick and dreadful darkness comes over him. Oh boy, poor old Abraham. There he is again, plunged into the dark. Get used to it, folks. Darkness always accompanies the experience of something new and uncertain. Darkness, like loss, is too easily assumed to be negative. Darkness is a place we think we should not be. But it is, in fact, a normal and important part of the life of faith. Wherever we find ourselves in the dark, we should remember Abraham. If darkness does nothing else for us, it should stop us rushing around and trying to fight the darkness, because we'll only fall over something. Rather than trying to find a solution, the darkness should make us learn to be still and trust. So the darkness was a strange twist on this ceremony. That wasn't meant to happen. But the second strange twist after that sunset is that it wasn't God and Abraham who passed between the pieces. It was only God. It was only God. Abraham was asleep. Didn't do anything. So, I have got to my last point on your notes. The most wonderful thing I want you to take from this story is that God did it all. God did it all. God didn't give us a contract and say, if you do this, then I'll do that. And thank goodness he didn't, because none of us would have been able to fulfill our side of the contract. He gave us a covenant promise, which is that we belong. We are unconditionally accepted and loved. When you were born, nobody handed your parents a contract and made them sign it, saying that they would love John, Sheila, Peter, Mary, unconditionally. Nobody asked them to do that, because we all know that being a parent means making that unconditional commitment to love that child enough to allow them to become who they are. We can't relate to our children on a contractual basis. And in fact, when families become dysfunctional and relationships break down, it's very often because people have started relating to each other on a contractual basis. But that's another whole story. I'm not going to go into it. You can't react to God on a contractual basis. God loves us. God's grace and love is unconditional. We do absolutely nothing to earn it. And why would I want a covenant and not a contract? Why would I want a God who doesn't do things for me? Because this God promises to love me however I mess up. And that is amazing. And God promises to be with me however dark things get. And we are about to see this whole story being reenacted again as we come to our prayer of thanksgiving and the sharing of communion. God will, in the course of history, unfold this story. God will give himself. He will step into our world. He will take it upon himself to do everything necessary to redeem and rescue us. What have we got to do like Abraham? We simply have to stand and receive and offer to God an open and willing heart to trust God. When I hold up the wafer later and say that the Christ's body has been broken, will you picture that scene of Abraham with those sliced open bodies? Because that's what it's meant to make you think about. That's the price that Jesus was willing to pay, to come down, to give his body, for that body to be completely broken. And I'll say the words, not this morning, I think, but in sometimes when I say the Eucharistic prayer, he opened wide his arms of love upon the cross to make a perfect sacrifice for sin. Later, Paul will write in Romans over there, but God demonstrates his own love for us that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And then in Corinthians, he'll write, but we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. It is all God. So here's this story of Abraham being lost and confused, despairing and in the dark. And God doing everything necessary in him and through him to carry the story forward. Yes, it took a way longer time than Abraham ever thought it would. And it took a new name. He became Abraham. Notice that he had to step into that identity before it actually happened. But it was all God. God does everything. He didn't do this so that we could have easy answers, instant solutions, or so that we could be spared the complex and difficult situations of life. But he did it so that we would have the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ. For God, who said, "Let light shine out of darkness," made his light shine in our hearts To give us, what does it say? To give us answers, to give us solutions, to give us help and support. No, it doesn't say any of those things. It says to give us the light of the knowledge of the face of Christ. The presence of God matters more than anything. This is the covenant that God has made for you, allowing his body to be broken to show the extent of his love. Amen.